Welcome to the Totally Adequate Podcast, where we bring you the latest news and conversations from the world of healthcare, network adequacy, and provider data accuracy. I'm your host, Kate Dieters.
The Totally Adequate Podcast is brought to you by Quest Analytics. Quest Analytics helps provider networks gain astonishing efficiencies, provides dependable data insights, and helps you easily meet regulatory requirements. Visit questanalytics.com for more information.
Telehealth is a rapidly growing part of healthcare delivery, with patients, payers, and providers all driving the discussion. However, healthcare regulators are still in the process of determining if or how to incorporate telehealth into today's network adequacy standards. Today, I'm talking with Zach Snyder, VP of Government Affairs at Quest Analytics, to get his take on where this conversation currently stands and what lawmakers are doing to make their temporary rules permanent regulations. Let's dive right in. Zach, thank you so much for being here today. To help get us started, can you give us a little bit of an overview of what's going on from a regulatory standpoint with telehealth and network adequacy?
Well, Kate, the environment is actually pretty barren. Regulators at all levels have just begun trying to incorporate telehealth considerations into network adequacy standards. And the first time that we really saw this happen was in 2020 when Medicare Advantage, seeing the explosive rise in utilization of telehealth services, wanted to incorporate a telehealth network adequacy credit into its standards. And so what it has done is it has looked at a collection of provider and specialty types, and it has allowed health plans to take a 10% credit on those provider specialty types. So before, a health plan could meet the standards by showing that they had providers, bricks and mortar, for all of those provider specialty types. Now they can take a 10% credit for a collection of them. And this is all meant to recognize that there has been an increase in utilization of telehealth services with the health plan bringing in more providers to meet the needs through telehealth.
Great. And would you say, you know, looking at that again, looking at Medicare Advantage, that's happening really in the rural areas as well, correct? Like that's where kind of that credit stemmed from too, to make sure that anyone, those outliers were able to get access to care.
Rural was a major driver for this. Urban as well though, because there are urban areas in the United States where individuals still have a hard time getting access to the provider and specialty types that they really need to treat their healthcare needs. So there are disparities at both the rural and urban area. However, you're right, rural is really driving the conversation here. Medicare Advantage, they saw an over 600% increase in utilization of telehealth services during the pandemic. And there are major shortages in those areas. And the hope is by allowing the health plans to take this credit that they can bring in those provider specialty types that are essential to meet the needs in those rural areas.
That's an amazing stat, Zach. I mean, just thinking about how many people were able to still get the healthcare services that they needed and just seems like it was very much a help for them. Would you say that that would be about accurate, or are you seeing that there are some negative impacts from it as well?
Studies show people really enjoy getting their healthcare met through telehealth services. Studies also show that for the provider specialty types that Medicare Advantage has identified, that the care received is just as quality as care you would receive in person. That's one of the reasons why Medicare Advantage has allowed health plans to take a credit for those collection of provider specialty types.
That's great. And for our listeners that don't know, but Zach has a very unique position at the table with a lot of the regulators, both federal and state, and what they're doing for really looking at how can we continue to incorporate telehealth into our network adequacy standards. And Zach, if you wouldn't mind sharing a little light on what those conversations are looking like today, especially after the stats that you just provided for us.
In our work with CMS, we're working with both Medicare Advantage and the exchange group, and that group is called SOCIO. We know that many other regulators are also looking into telehealth considerations. I will also speak about California and their Medicaid agency and Maryland at the Department of Insurance. So that's for the commercial side. We see that SOCIO is looking directly to Medicare Advantage. In their latest proposed rule that they put out there, and they've actually finalized the proposed rule, they've said that they're going to collect information from health plans this year and next year to inform a Medicare Advantage style telehealth credit. This is not a done deal, but they are looking into that. California, in the Medicaid space, they have moved toward a telehealth credit in that space. Unlike Medicare Advantage, where they did a 10% credit, in California, they're doing a 5% credit. But they've also expanded the provider specialty types. So at the Medicare Advantage level, they have a collection. It's about a dozen or so provider and specialty types. California, they have expanded it to include a few others, such as HIV providers in that state. So that's really interesting. And they have finalized that, and that is now a requirement. Whereas before, California was allowing a 5% credit only in the rural areas. Kate, to your earlier suggestion that rural concerns is driving the need to incorporate telehealth considerations into network adequacy, because network adequacy is all about ensuring that individuals have access to the providers that are critical to meeting the healthcare needs of the population. And in Maryland, what we're seeing is something very interesting. They are looking at a telehealth credit that is based off of mileage. So giving a mileage credit and also giving a wait time credit as well when it comes to telehealth. So pretty interesting developments we're seeing. And I expect more regulators to consider incorporating telehealth as the year goes on and as we go into next year.
Oh, that is great. And you said those magical words, Zach, of wait time. You know, we're seeing that, like I said, on the exchange side with SOCIO. And we also are getting some other questions popping up from those clients that work with Quest Analytics around, is this something that we should be preparing ourselves for Medicare Advantage? So do you have any kind of inside or information of if that is something that it would also be coming, you said, whether it be with telehealth or not, but could be coming to Medicare Advantage?
Wait times continue to be a major issue as it relates to network adequacy. The issue, though, is how does a health plan determine whether or not a provider in its network is open to accepting new patients? And how can a health plan that doesn't employ the provider ensure that the wait times are reasonable and that the wait times that the provider is offering meet the standard? That is the problem that regulators are trying to solve for. And we have seen regulators put out new proposals in order to address those issues. I'll give you one example. Going back to the exchange, looking at the group that regulates the exchange at CMS, SOCIO, they are beginning to think about this, and they are going to be rolling out new regulations in 2024, and they're going to permit health plans to reach out to providers to get this information. And they're going to be enforcing it by doing secret shoppers and by doing surveys. So we will expect more regulations around wait times in the near future.
That is great. So for all you listening, that's your little tip for you to keep an eye out on. And thank you, Zach, for giving us that. But bringing back to telehealth, again, with your position where you're working with a lot of the important people that are making those regulations, are there things that you're seeing as considerations for them? Or are there things also that like health plans should be saying, okay, if I'm not measuring this or looking at this, this is what I should start measuring or at least you know, taking inventory on?
That's a really great question. Right now, the telehealth credits that we've seen, they've been across the board, 10%, 5%. We've talked a lot about that. Regulators, they're interested in creating a telehealth credit that's more dynamic, that takes into consideration more parameters. For example, what about access to broadband? Does an individual in a specific geographic region have access to broadband? If their access to broadband is low, then their ability to access telehealth services is also low. So it might not be wise to permit a large telehealth credit in that area. But this presents yet another issue, because what does it mean to have access to broadband services? The fact that broadband is just there, I was reading an article about the exciting new Starlink program that offers insane connection speeds, but it's very expensive. So access to broadband, and I heard this directly from a federal regulator, that access to broadband has to mean affordable access to broadband. A lot of states, they view broadband speeds as at least 25 megabytes per second, and that has some sort of large subsidy to it. So as states, as the federal government looks into creating a more dynamic telehealth credit situation, they're interested in looking at access to broadband because they see them as going hand in hand.
Yeah, it's a great point. And as you're talking about that, I'm thinking even, you know, if you're looking at everything from dual eligibles or, again, bringing some sort of a telehealth credit to Medicaid, how are we going to start bringing in those other factors? You mentioned broadband, Zach, and, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of other considerations that they're also trying to bring into a holistic view of, if we are now allowing telehealth, what does that mean in other cases as well?
That's right. In California and their Medicaid program, perhaps that's why they went to a 5% credit, because they don't have a dynamic system to determine a telehealth credit.
It's a lot to consider, right?
That's right.
And Zach, I know that you are doing a lot of work at Quest Analytics to be able to be that better partner for those regulators. If you can shed some light on the work that you are doing with your team around helping regulators determine how do we consider telehealth into our network adequacy standards?
Knowing that regulators are interested in incorporating telehealth standards into network adequacy, at Quest Analytics, we decided it was time to sponsor independent research to determine the factors that would be essential to creating a comprehensive telehealth network adequacy policy. We have done that. So we have sponsored research in that world. And what the research will be investigating is things like, what are the provider and facility specialty types that are appropriate for telehealth as a consideration into the policy framework for a network adequacy credit. The other aspects that the researchers will be looking at, we talked about this before, but it's related to broadband. Is broadband an appropriate parameter to consider? We will be looking at other factors such as the laws that are in each of the states, because every state regulates telehealth in a different way. And if a state has very restrictive telehealth laws, meaning restrictions on how providers can provide services through telehealth, then perhaps a state wouldn't want to give such a big credit in that area. But if a state has permissive laws, if a state permits providers to deliver services via telehealth, then perhaps they would offer a larger credit. We're going to be looking at different things. For example, does the provider specialty or does the issue or the service that the patient is receiving require the use of remote patient monitoring? That adds to the complexity of the service, and that should in turn impact the amount of the credit that would be offered on the provider specialty type. So these researchers, they will be completing research, and that research will be used as the basis for a policy white paper that will be developed by Quest Analytics. And we will be sharing it with our partners at SSIO, at Medicare Advantage, at state departments of insurance and at state Medicaid agencies, all as a way to help think through a way to create new standards that regulators can rely on when developing network adequacy regulations.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. And I can't wait to get my hands on that. When do you think, timeline-wise, that that will be published out for the world?
We hope to have this ready for external publication by the end of this year.
Okay, great.
We've sponsored the research. It's underway right now. We've been getting drafts of it. It's been very interesting. We have developed an advisory committee made up of leaders in regulatory agencies, in industry, and also stakeholders, you know, consumer advocates that engage on these issues. It's really important for us also to get the perspective of individuals who are most impacted by changes to network adequacy regulations to understand that impact on them. And that also helps create that feedback loop for us to create the best possible policy. Because when you talk to regulators, their goal that they continually tell us is to protect consumers. And that is the mindset that we have when we develop proposed recommendations and work with our partners. It's to really look at that and bring the perspective, of course, of the industry as well. Because when we talk with industry, they have the same goal in mind. How can we develop the best possible network to deliver the healthcare that's essential for our population?
Yes, it sounds fascinating. And are you able to share any of the immediate feedback that you're seeing the most of, or any kind of similarities that you're seeing them stand out the most?
Well, what we're seeing is the need to group the specialties into different tiers. So it's really interesting what we're seeing from the initial research, but what we see out in the community right now with, say, Medicare Advantage is they've identified a collection of provider specialty types, about a dozen or so. We're seeing the research suggest that the provider specialty types be put into tiers from complexity. So there would be one tier that would be the least complex services to be delivered, and then the final tier that would be the most complex. And the credit would be dynamic. And so it would be more permissive in the tiers that have less complexity, and it would be more restrictive in the tiers that have more complexity. Again, bringing that systematic approach based on evidence and research to allow the regulator to create a regulation that protects consumers and is based on the best possible research and evidence.
Yes, it sounds very fascinating. I could continue to ask you many questions, but I will hold off until next time I talk to you. But anything else around that piece of research that you are currently doing, or is that leading into additional research that you either have slated, or it's making you think, hey, maybe we should look at this, or we should be considering this over here?
We want the research to drive the next set of questions that we had. We walked into the research with a hypothesis about the best way to approach this. It included evaluating various parameters to allow a regulator to create a dynamic network adequacy credit. Now that we have the initial research, we hope to develop a second set of questions to further dial in the approach, all while getting needed input from other stakeholders, industry, regulators, like I said, community-based organizations. And what we really hope to do is begin to have conversations one-on-one, but also bring this to where people meet, bring this to conferences and other areas where all of the leaders and stakeholders are meeting, and use Quest Analytics as a convener on this issue to ask the questions and to get to the solution. So where we're not driving an agenda, but we are convening the best people, the smartest people, to come up with a common goal. And that is delivering networks that truly meet the healthcare needs of the population.
Well, sounds great. And I can't wait to hear and read more, Zach. So thank you very much for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you.
The Totally Adequate Podcast is brought to you by Quest Analytics. Payers and plans, health systems and provider groups, regulators and specialties ensure the best possible access to healthcare services with Quest Enterprise Services. Visit questanalytics.com for more information.
Zach, we're talking a lot about telehealth today, but as we can hear and see, that really flows into a lot of different, either if you want to say product lines or different types of other considerations that are going on for health plans right now. What would you say are the top three things that health plans should be paying attention to right now if they're not?
Number one is health equity. Incorporating health equity considerations into the way that you build networks. Regulators are looking at right now how to incorporate health equity considerations into network adequacy regulations. So this is all about building new regulations, new requirements that will ensure individuals have access to the healthcare providers that are essential to meeting their health equity needs. For example, language is always an example we go to. Studies show that individuals who seek care in their first language have better health outcomes. So it stands to reason that an adequate provider network would have providers of a certain language in order to meet the health equity needs of the population. Now, there are other factors that they're looking at as well. Many lines of business are looking at this. CMS is looking at this at both the Medicare Advantage level. They just issued a RFI, a request for information, asking respondents to address this very issue. What are those health equity considerations we should build into our network adequacy regulations at the Medicare Advantage level? The exchange at SSIO, they have also signaled that they are moving toward regulations that incorporate health equity considerations consistent with a executive order issued by the president, by President Biden, on one of his first days in office. It's all being driven there. But the federal government isn't the only jurisdiction looking into this. Other states are looking into this as well. Colorado, through their Colorado option, they've issued new regulations that require health plans to address health equity by creating culturally competent networks. So states are looking into this as well. We can imagine more states looking into this, and that is the first thing that I would point health plans to. Number two would be wait times. There is further investigation. There is further pressure being placed on health plans to understand the wait time situation with the providers in their network. We understand that health plans, in many cases, don't employ the providers, so they don't control their wait times. But there is increased pressure from regulators at all levels to ensure that health plans make sure that their members have access to providers within reasonable timeframes. For example, the exchange, they are moving in 2024 to require health plans to ensure that their members have access to three types of providers within certain wait time metrics. So for example, for a behavioral health provider visit, a health plan will have to ensure that their members are able to see a provider in their network within 10 days, 10 business days. The third piece is provider directory accuracy. The No Surprises Act passed, and it requires health plans to ensure that they have accurate provider directories, that they have a process in place to ensure that they have accurate provider directories, and that they're actually doing outreach to providers to ensure that their phone numbers are up to date, their locations are up to date, the type of provider that they are is up to date. With this notion of ghost networks, meaning that you look at a provider in your provider network, you call the provider in your provider network, and you find that the phone number's been disconnected, that they're no longer in business, that there's a variety of issues. That is increased. And there is an increased recognition by regulators that they want to do something about this. And so they're looking at further regulations. We also expect, going back to the No Surprises Act, that the federal government will issue further regulations to implement that requirement. It's already in place. It began January 1, 2022. So health plans, they're already required to comply, but we expect further regulations to implement that, giving health plans more information about how to comply with this requirement. And we are right there in those conversations at Quest Analytics to help health plans navigate these and other regulations that relate to network adequacy.
Oh, that is great. Thank you so much, Zach. And thanks again for your time today. We always appreciate you sharing your wealth of knowledge and can't wait to have you back.
Thank you.
The Totally Adequate Podcast is brought to you by Quest Analytics. Move faster, build smarter. Want to expand into new counties, launch new products, grow your network of providers? Let us show you how Quest Enterprise Services helps you pinpoint the right opportunities for your business goals in just a few clicks of a button. Visit questanalytics.com for more information.